Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, we'll cross to Ballarat for the latest on a new search for the body of Samantha Murphy. Plus, we find out just how common sextortion is in Australia. The stats are very disturbing. And Donald Trump is coming unstuck this week on the issue of abortion rights. The Albanese government is also coming unstuck, facing friendly fire on its controversial deportation bill. And Margot Robbie is going to turn the board game Monopoly into a movie. In our top story today, we cross to Ballarat for the latest on the search for Samantha Murphy.
New police intelligence has led officers to a search zone south of Ballarat, where they'll be focusing their efforts here today.
Victoria Police have launched a new bid to find the body of missing Ballarat woman Samantha Murphy, with officers today searching the Enfield State Park, about 25 kilometres south of the regional city. The 51-year-old mum was last seen more than 2 months ago when she left her Ballarat East home to go for a run. Last month, police charged 22-year-old Patrick Stevenson with Murphy's murder after arresting him in the nearby farming town of Scottsburn. Let's cross to Enfield State Park now and Channel 7 Melbourne crime reporter Cassie Zervos. Cassie, what's the latest on the search today?
So police have been out all day from the early hours of this morning. I've been told they were in fact in town a couple of days ago. New intelligence has led them to this specific location. Now I'm told that police haven't actually searched this area before. So it's a bit of a development in the search for the missing mother of three. What we've seen today is new specialised units coming up from Melbourne, but also interstate, New South Wales, cadaver dogs. So these dogs are trained to find human remains. There's about two of them that have been out with their handlers and with forensic officers scouring this dense bushland. But at this stage, we're still waiting to see if there's an update and that news that everyone in town and, of course, Samantha's family has been waiting for. And that is, of course, if she's been found.
Mm. And what is the status of the search right now? Is it still ongoing or have they called a halt to it for the day?
So right now, police, the Mounted Branch officers on dirt bikes, they're still in the bushland. They're due to come back in the next hour or so. I've been told due to the weather conditions in Melbourne, it's getting quite windy and there is rain expected. So they're planning to have a bit of a break this afternoon, depending what happens tonight and how dark it gets. But then they will pick up first thing tomorrow, depending, of course, on the weather conditions here.
Mm. And what have Victoria Police said, if anything, about what has led them to this new search area?
So I have been told the 22-year-old accused murderer, Patrick Stevenson, he's still not cooperating with investigators. So whatever has led them here is new intelligence based on information and evidence they have obtained through witnesses, through technology, through CCTV. But they are remaining quite tight-lipped as to what specifically has led them here. But I do think it's important to note that the accused murderer, he's still not cooperating with investigators, which is making another level of complexity to this search for Samantha. But another interesting bit of information is that her husband, Michael, I spoke to him today and he's actually joined the police. He's been searching with them as well. He says he can't just sit at home anymore. He needs to have some sort of closure, not just for himself, but of course for their children, which has been just the most horrific couple of months for them and their family.
Mm, yeah, indeed. Channel 7 Melbourne crime reporter Cassie Zervos, I know you will keep us updated if there's a breakthrough in this case that the whole of Australia is watching. Thanks for joining me on the Nightly Five.
Thank you for having me.
One online threat is sextortion. When someone online blackmails or threatens to share sexual images to get you to do something you don't want to do, like send photos or money.
We've been following the disturbing issue of sextortion on the show this week, where Australians and often kids are targeted by heartless scammers overseas, tricked into thinking they're having a sexually explicit conversation with the real person, only to then be blackmailed into committing crimes or paying money. This week, two men in Nigeria were charged with sextortion of an Australian teen that drove the boy to take his own life. Investigative reporter at The Nightly, Kristen Shorten, has been looking into this, and she joins me on the line now. Kristen, what have police told you about how common this issue is in Australia?
Well, Ben, Australian Federal Police reckon that there's probably more than 1,000 children being threatened with financial sextortion online on social media each month, and they're expressing serious concerns for young people following this spate of youth suicides that you mentioned. You know, these statistics, they're probably just the tip of the iceberg. The AFP said it believes that probably only 1 in 10 victims report these cases and these incidents to police. So, you know, at the moment they're getting about 110 reports a month. Last year it was actually 300 reports of sextortion a month. Not quite sure why they've dropped, but they are starting to rise again. And police are very concerned about this alarming, epidemic of sextortion affecting Australian kids.
Yeah, those statistics are just shocking. And yesterday in the Nightly, you revealed there had been at least 4 suicides related to sextortion in Victoria in the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. How worried are the police about the well-being of victims in these cases?
Well, they're very worried, Ben, because victims can suffer such serious psychological impacts from being caught up in this crime. It's a crime, you know, run by, you know, sophisticated crime syndicates overseas. There obviously are offenders in Australia as well, but a lot of them are based in, you know, West African countries like Nigeria. So they're really, you know, these faceless criminals who are a long way away, and they're causing just absolute, you know, devastation to Australian children and their families. The AFP have said this week they have serious safety and wellbeing concerns for children caught up in this, especially given the spate of suicides and self-harm that they're seeing. They said they're aware of other Australian cases not reported where young people in Australia have taken their life. So they have grave concerns. And the cyber safety expert I spoke to this week also said that, you know, the risk of self-harm among people affected by sextortion is very, very high. She said she'd never seen a crime type in her 30 years. She was a cop for 27 years. So in her, you know, 3 decades of policing, that would tip a mentally well young person into crisis so quickly.
Mm. And part of it is because I guess you're talking about stuff that's inherently embarrassing if it's made public, these private conversations of a sexual nature. And is that what's underpinning, I guess, the underreporting of these crimes, the fact that victims are staying silent about it?
Yeah, I think embarrassing is such an understatement. I mean, you know, things that are embarrassing might be having your texts read out publicly, having intimate, explicit and nude photos of you. That's just child sexual exploitation, and the humiliation, fear, shame, hopelessness that victims feel means that they try to deal with it on their own. So you've got teenagers, you've got young people who don't have the maturity, the perspective, or aren't at a level of development to sort of, yeah, I guess, put this in perspective, and they're in their bedroom alone with their devices trying to negotiate and deal with these ruthless criminals and crime syndicates. So you've got kids in their bedrooms trying to, you know, scrounge together payments to try and resolve this on their own without speaking to anyone because they're so ashamed, so embarrassed, so scared they're going to get in trouble, and because they feel they've been caught out or done something wrong by sharing these images or videos of themselves. So it's just such a, you know, complicated mix of emotions and negative feeling that they'd be having, which does force them to try and deal with it on their own without sharing.
Yeah.
But really, they need to not be ashamed and speak to a parent, a guardian, or a trusted adult so that they can get help in dealing with this.
Mm, absolutely. And so what should people do? What should kids do and parents do if their child or themselves are a victim of sextortion?
The first thing to do is to stay calm. There's a whole range of steps that ideally should be taken, and they're outlined on, you know, the AFP's website as well as that of the eSafety Commissioner, because obviously, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, you want to preserve evidence, you want to have this material removed from online, and you want to have the perpetrators caught. But as a parent, the most immediate thing to do is provide that emotional and welfare support to your child, who would be probably feeling quite distraught and spiralling as a result of being caught up in one of these scams. So providing that emotional and welfare support to your child, seeking mental health support if required, but obviously as soon as practicable, reporting this to the Australian Federal Police. You just need to reassure young people that they are the victim of a crime, they haven't done anything wrong, they're not in trouble, and that this can be fixed.
Yeah, and remember that help is available anonymously at Lifeline. You can call 131114, or for people under 25, you can call Kids Helpline on 1800 55 1800. Investigative reporter at The Nightly, Kristen Shorten, such an important story to get the message out there. We really appreciate you sharing that message on The Nightly Five.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
I think the ASF 17 case does show that it is important that we have these powers. It's not the only reason why we're doing this, though.
That's Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill talking about the government's contentious deportation legislation. And now Albo is facing a grassroots internal revolt over the laws, with pro-refugee Labor members describing the emergency powers as huge overreach. Labor for Refugees in New South Wales and ACT is warning the legislation breaches the party's own national policy platform, which opposes mandatory minimum sentencing. The group's concerns are detailed in a submission to a parliamentary inquiry into the bill, set up after the Coalition and the Greens joined forces to thwart Labor's bid to rush it through federal parliament. The emergency legislation is designed to make it easier for the Commonwealth to deport non-citizens who fail to cooperate with authorities. It was supposed to preempt a High Court challenge to be heard next Wednesday from a man who was refusing to cooperate with the government because he fears he could be harmed if he was deported back to Iran. The legislation would allow the government to impose a prison sentence of between 1 and 5 years on asylum seekers who refused to cooperate with their deportation. A Senate committee comprising Labor and Liberal members earlier this month sounded the alarm about the bill, including the use of mandatory minimum sentencing. In a submission published today, Labor for Refugees Secretary Nizza Ciano referenced those flaws and said the group shared the long list of human rights concerns that the Law Council of Australia had with the bill. For the rest of this story, download the Nightly app.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
Former President Donald Trump finds himself caught between a rock and a hard place right now. The rock in this scenario is moderate Republicans, who think total abortion bans are the work of religious nutjobs and rednecks. And the hard place is the religious nutjobs and rednecks who Trump hopes will vote for him. The biggest problem for Trump is that he needs both groups to vote for him to have any hope of beating Joe Biden. Because remember, Biden won the popular vote fairly comfortably last time around, so Trump desperately needs to appeal to moderate middle America. And it's this group, living predominantly north of the Mason-Dixon line, that have been aghast at state legislatures, mostly in the south of America, criminalising abortion. You better believe Biden knows it and used his recent State of the Union address to hammer abortion rights as a wedge in the middle of Trump's supporter base. Trump is, after all, the bloke who took credit for overturning Roe versus Wade, ending federal protection in the US for the right to an abortion. But this week we had proof of the tightrope Trump is now walking. He said this week that the states should make their own decisions on abortion, classic small government rhetoric from the right. Next minute, Arizona legislated a near total abortion ban, and Trump was forced to say that the state went too far or risk losing those moderate voters. Now Democrats are pushing the line that Trump could introduce a national abortion ban, which will play extremely poorly with voters in major cities. Republicans have already faced electoral consequences following the end of Roe. Abortion rights advocates have won 7 state ballot initiatives since the Supreme Court decision, and a recent Marquette Law School national poll found that 70% of registered voters in America said that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. So expect to hear a lot more about abortion rights as the presidential race heats up.
Being an 8-year-old landlord ain't easy. Takes a special kind of dedication. It's all in the name of the game. All is fair in Monopoly.
The same company who brought you the epically terrible 2012 box office flop Battleship, based on the board game of the same name, are now hoping to do a whole lot better with a big screen adaptation of Monopoly. And they've enlisted a Hollywood superstar to make it happen. Here to tell us more is culture editor at The Nightly, Wenli Ma. OK, Wenli, who has Hasbro tapped to make Monopoly the movie?
Look, it makes a lot of sense. They have tapped Lucky Chap, which is the production company started by Margot Robbie. And, of course, they made Barbie. So if you're Hasbro and you're going, geez, our rivals over at Mattel had a pretty good year last year with Barbie, I bet the toy sales went up as well as whatever the share at the box office they got, they might go, now let's try and do that again, but let's do it with Mr. Moneybags.
Yeah. So just for the benefit of the listeners in the cheap seats, do you want to run through what Margot Robbie's Lucky Chap production house accomplished with its Barbie adaptation?
Absolutely. I mean, Margot and Lucky Chap, they knew the Barbie rights were up a few years ago and they chased after it. They chased after director Greta Gerwig. And of course, the movie went on to become a genuine pop cultural sensation. It made $1.4 billion at the box office. It got 8 Oscar nominations. It won one, and it just took over the conversation for about a month. I reckon anyone who was stocking pink tutus in their shops probably sold out. Like, it was a huge deal. So, I mean, does that mean everyone's going to be wearing top hats in a couple of years? Maybe.
Do you have a favorite Monopoly piece that you always use when you play?
I used to like the car. I know that's like so generic, but I loved the car. Maybe it's because I don't drive myself. Yeah. But it is an interesting thing because 2 weeks ago, Lucky Chap, Margot's company, also announced they're doing a movie adaptation of The Sims video game. So it very much looks like they're kind of on a tear right now in terms of like, what can we do in terms of branded toys and games and experiences and make them into big, you know, movie experiences. Personally, I think it's a bit of a risky move because I think Margot's known for producing kind of bolder, female-focused ideas, movies, including Promising Young Woman, Saltburn, Netflix TV series Made. So for them to do so many sort of toys and games all at once feels a little bit risky because it's one thing if you're the pioneer that sets the trend, it's something else when then you become one of its followers as well.
Yeah, like I gotta say, I agree with you completely on that. Like, I think Barbie was out of the box, excuse the pun, and I think it was, personally, I didn't love the film, but I absolutely respect what it achieved and what Greta and Margot were able to achieve with that. As far as Hasbro goes, like, you'd have to say they've got a few more runs on the board than Mattel did in the film sense, you know, Transformers, G.I. Joe, all that kind of stuff, IP that they've brought to the big screen in the past. Do we know anything about what a Monopoly adaptation might look like?
Look, there are absolutely no details yet. I imagine it won't just be like a 2D board. And it could very well be that she brings on board a filmmaker the same caliber as Greta Gerwig, because I think that's the other piece in the Barbie conversation, is that it's such a very specifically Greta and to a degree Noah Baumbach vision that I don't know that you can replicate that. It felt like, you know, something special in that moment. But we do know that Mattel, which also went, we want more money from the movie people. They are making like a gazillion different movies based on their toys. There's a Polly Pocket movie coming up, directed by Lena Dunham, starring Lily Collins. There's a Barney movie coming up with Daniel Kaluuya. And that's the other thing. It's like everyone is going to be doing this. So how does a Monopoly movie cut through? I mean, having said that, the Cluedo movie is one of my favourite go-tos on a Friday night. So maybe there is some hope.
Yeah, well, look, let's stay hopeful because Margot, she's certainly deserved the benefit of the doubt on what she's done so far. Culture editor at The Nightly, Wenli Ma, thanks for giving us this update on the show.
Thank you.
And that, folks, is today's show. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join me tomorrow on The Nightly Five.
The Nightly Five podcast is brought to you by Seven West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au, helping you get in front of tomorrow.